just, yeah, it's the things we do, isn't it?
I suppose, but so, anyway, yes. Yeah. Let's make it a damn sight more interesting than it actually is.
So you got your water ingress issues as well then?
Yeah, I mean, it's been fine. I mean, I've been in there for 10 years and for... Yeah. Oh, hello.
Ooh. Yeah, you might want to mute that.
I've just muted it. There we go. That was very confusing. Yeah, like first. I said, yeah, I was in there for like 10 years and it was absolutely fine until about 5 years ago. And then one day I just noticed there was this river running around down the back of my workbench. I know. I thought, that's strange. So I pulled everything out. And you can see...
You've been making river tables?
No.
Got on the trend for the river table. That's what it is.
Yeah, no, there's none of that. and yeah, it seems that there is a damp course. And then this is coming in underneath the damp course. But it's not my garage, so I just live with it. I'm not too fast. You know.
Just move stuff out of the way so it's not...
Yeah, I'll just move stuff out of the way and then, you know, one day, hopefully, we'll move out of the city and we'll live in a tiny little place with an enormous workshop.
Oh, that's the dream, isn't it? Yeah, tiny little place. There's not too much clutter and not too expensive to keep warm because all the money's going into keeping the workshop warm.
Exactly. Yeah, and a nice forest with a cabin in, I think.
Ah, so you can mill your own trees.
Mill your own trees, make your own house, make your own furniture, and then burn it to keep warm.
the wood, not the trees, not the furniture in the...
Well, it depends how desperate things get, I suppose.
Well, I mean, that is the advantage of, yeah, if you do make wooden furniture, if you get desperate, you can burn it. If you've made stuff out of non-flammable materials, I mean, yeah, what welders are supposed to do if they want to burn their nicely made metal furniture?
I don't know. Well, they're using the wrong material.
Well, that's always all they need, a much more warmer fire. Yeah.
A really, really sort of like acetylene-based fire. Yeah. We like to get it up to a few hundred degrees. They just need a few thousand.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fine.
Hey, just showing off.
Yeah.
That's what it is, exactly. Really. The thing with metal workers, of course, is that they're easier to cover up for their mistakes because they can just glue more bits back on.
Yeah, far stick easier it back than on. We can.
Yeah, the woodworkers. If anyone's wondering, well, Phil's taking a drink. Jamie has been, how should we put it, living it up with the glitterati of the 3D printing world this weekend. So he's a little bit tired, shall we say. And so just me and Phil having a little chat.
Yep.
Talking about workshops at the moment. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Tinkerage, you mentioned before we started, the kind of, you know, you it's a furnace at times. The Tinkerage is lucky. It never really gets hot, even in the hottest of the summer. It because of the way it's angled, it generally stays acceptably cool, even in the hottest weather. But it is blooming freezing the rest of the time.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem with it. And at the moment, water ingress, and I'd had to make some adjustments to the door frame, and I think I need to do it again. So I still need to replace the frame sealant around the door frame. So there's just a draft coming in. Not getting any water coming in that way, luckily.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cold, damp, miserable.
Well, it sounds a lot more sealed in than mine, which is, you know, it's just an up and over garage. So you can either lock yourself in or you can have all the elements coming in the front.
Yeah, because you've only got the one door, haven't you? Yeah. Yep. So you can't even kind of...
No, there's no side door or anything like that. It's literally just just the front. So, I mean, most of the time it's fine. You know, and if it's absolutely lashing it down, you can sort of angle the front down a bit and it just runs off rather than runs in. Yeah, it's not perfect, but it's not a perfect world, is it?
No, but it's still, it's a usable space. I mean, you've made some nice pieces of furniture in there. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. I made a right mess and all.
Yeah, you've had a few injuries too. Yeah.
I did have that slight argument with the surface planer. Yes. Which was, that was a very different way that my Sunday afternoon panned out.
I can imagine you didn't plan that one.
No, and the annoying thing is, I was just waiting for some glue to go off. So I thought, oh, you know what? I've got 20 minutes, half hour. What I'm going to do is I will, because I knew it was a job that I had to do. I'm going to true up the blades on the surface planer because I know they're out a bit because everything comes off with a little bit of a wonk on it.
Yeah.
So I had them all out and, you know, I reseated them and set them all up. And I thought, I'll just test it out. And and the bit of oak that I was planing, no, I wasn't using a push block because it will never happen to you until it does happen to you. And there, yeah, that piece of oak just shot out of my hand and dragged these two fingers onto the cutting head. Didn't even feel it.
That proved they were sharp.
Yeah, they were very sharp. Yeah, didn't feel it at all. And then it sort of flew off one way, and I thought that was unexpected. I thought I'll turn this off, and thought, hang on a minute, there's blood here. I looked and I thought,
where did that come from?
this is less than ideal. So I scrambled up to the first aid kit on the wall, and then
adamant every workshop should have a first aid kit, and not just some insulation tape. And a bit of rag. It's better than nothing, but ideally some proper first aid stuff.
Yeah. Well, so I've just got some plasters and some other bits and pieces in there. And I sort of looked at that and I looked at this and I thought, well, I've got here is not suitable. But in fairness to the Southwestern Ambulance Service and the Southmead Hospital in Bristol, on a Sunday afternoon, I was picked up. I was taken there. I was seen by a nurse. I was seen by a person who did an X-ray. I was seen by a plastic surgeon.
Cool.
To see, are we going to have to stitch bits of you back on or make new bits of you? And then I was patched up and sent on my way all in 2.5 hours.
Oh, flipping heck.
I know. So I have nothing but the absolute utmost respect for them.
Yeah, that's a friend of mine had to take his wife to hospital last week and they had a 3.5 hour wait just to be seen.
Well, this was pre-pandemic, I suppose.
Yeah, I think still even that. Yeah. So did you have to have any, presumably you didn't have to have any plastic surgery?
No. They just, I had loads of follow-up with, hang on. That's fascinating. That was. I had about sort of best part of a year's worth of follow-up with my doctor.
Yeah.
And just the nurse there. And it all grew back and it's all, mostly normal again.
They look fairly normal fingers.
If you look closely, it looks like a dog's chewed on them, but you know.
any loss of sensation or anything?
The tips of the fingers, they're a little bit numb and a little bit, they're still like a bit painful.
Which is interesting.
If I'm typing,
yeah,
which I do a lot for my job, unfortunately. Sometimes you can hit them and it's just like, that's quite painful, actually. A bit of a sort of a sharp sting. So obviously there's some nerve damage stuff there. But, you get on with it.
You do see some of if you troll the wrong parts of the internet, you can find kind of pictures of people's injuries. And people sometimes just share them. Just because, look, I've just had less sex on the table saw. Look.
Yeah. We used to have a health and safety guy at work who's got the most fantastic name of Joe Tripp. It doesn't work there anymore. He now works for some other big company. And he used to tell tales of when he worked on building sites and used to love telling us about all the horrific injuries he'd seen. Yeah. Along the lines, some of the more, the most memorable one was someone was messing around with a nail gun. And he said to them, yeah, you want to be careful with that because, you know, if you carry on like that, you're going to nail yourself to something. And then literally 30 seconds later, this guy nailed his hand. Nail gun through the hand into a piece of timber.
It's almost like you're doing it on purpose.
I know. Watch this.
You can't nail yourself to a piece of wood. Look.
Oh, actually, you can. And it's quite effective.
Yeah. Building sites. I've heard a few from building sites. And the ones I don't like particularly are the way you kind of hear about somebody getting badly hurt because they decided to haze them. Yeah, they were kind of, yeah. Oh, let's just fill their overalls with concrete while they're actually wearing them. And stuff like that. Oh, yeah, he's got burns all over his body. Yeah, how did that happen? Yeah, well, sticking air compressors where air compressors shouldn't be stuck and the like.
The hoses
from air compressor. I should probably point that out. Right. Yeah, there's some horrible people. And yeah, I mean, if touch wood, if I could find some wood. Yeah, I've not had any serious workshop injuries. A couple of slices from carving knives and chisels. A couple of close shaves, couple of bits of kickback. The planer thickness, though, particularly the planer side of it does. I haven't got one of my own, but using one at the men's shed, and it does scare me a little bit. It's just like,
yeah, it took me quite a while for me to get back on the bike with that one. Like the thickness apart, it was like, yeah, it's fine. I'll send stuff through that because you put it in one end and it comes out the other. When it comes down to the actual sort of, you know, planing, square edging something, it's like, I don't know if I want to. But no, I've got some fairly sturdy push blocks now. And it's like, yeah, it's a bit more inconvenient and there's not as much control as just using your hands.
Yeah. But,
you know, if something flies out your hand and you ruin a 5-pound push block rather than your actual hands.
Yeah. Do you find you've not got a table saw, have you?
I haven't, no. I really want one, but I haven't really got space for one.
Yeah. I got rid of mine because I didn't have the space to really use it. I had to take it outside, and I swapped for a track saw. I got the track saw first and then went, I don't need a table saw because I don't have room. I still use one at the men's shed, and I really like having a table saw to use. Yeah. But it's one of those machines that just sometimes... I know certainly when I had my one at home, which was not a very good quality one, I did kind of find it a little bit scary to use. I think possibly also because I wasn't using it very often.
Yeah, well, I think like anything really, isn't it? You need, practice makes progress, as they say.
Yeah, it's avoiding the complacency as well, though, isn't it? That's the problem you're using. Because I can remember back when I worked in industry, I was using two different table saws generally multiple times per day, every day. Yeah, one was a 12-inch Wodkin. That was the small one. And we had an 18-inch Wodkin panel saw. And, within centimetres, single-digit centimetres of the blade, every day. And didn't think anything of it. Really. But then when I got table saw, didn't use a table saw then again until I bought my own kind of probably about 13 years ago. And it was just like, I having to use it outside. It was not a very good one. The fence wasn't very good. I mean, the Wodkins were just solid cast iron. I mean, the panel saw must have weighed about a ton and a half. The 12-inch must have weighed 3/4 of a ton.
Well, they're the ones you want, aren't they? Yeah. old iron.
In terms of if you're making straight cuts, if you just want to make a straight cut through 4 inches of oak or something like that, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. If you're trying to be a bit more sophisticated, I mean, they didn't have things like tracks on the T-track on the on the top. Yeah, it was just flat. There was a inch and a half round bar at the on the front edge of the smaller one, which the fence clamped to.
Yeah,
and it was straight as a die. Yeah, it was the blade and the fence were square to each other, and you had to make your. There was no measurements on the fence, so you had to kind of do it all by tape or rule, and which is fine. Yeah, it's obviously it's a good technique to have, and it's a bit of a pain sometimes, but yeah, it was absolutely solid. But yeah, if you wanted to kind of have cross-cut sleds or splined sleds or thin cutting sleds or any other type of sled or jig, forget it. Yeah, it wasn't gonna, unless it would ride on the fence. If it would ride on the fence, you'd probably be okay.
Yeah. I did have one very briefly. I had an Aldi special. and it was an Aldi special, and then it was on sale, so it was like 50 quid. Yeah, 50 quid for a whole table saw, and it was worth every $49.99 of it.
The top made of aluminium foil type thing.
Aluminium foil, the body was made of the thinnest plastic, and it had the most horrendously loud universal motor in it. I think I turned it on once. I scared all the local wildlife away. I made curtains twitch half a mile away, and I thought, nope, that ain't staying. I sold it relatively quickly for what I paid for it, so that was fine. But I think what I'd like to do is I'd like to rebuild my bench, because my bench is a bit of a mashup of stuff. It's an old science bench from work, which I took the top off, and then I used all the lovely jointed sapele for various projects, and I just replaced the top with CLS that was all glued together. And it wasn't jointed, not very well. It's got a lovely dip in it. Well, I tried to flatten it with a router, but I used too flimsy of a sort of like flattening jig, so it sort of dips in the middle where you push through. And because it's only sort of whatever that is, sort of
let's see, inch and a half.
My desk is made out of the same stuff, so I can tell you, because I had two of these science benches from work, and they are very nice. Inch and a quarter square steel.
I know the ones,
your regular ones, painted blue with a brown wooden top. And which is great as a table, but as a bench it just racks like crazy. So my plan was to at some point, because I got the Christopher Schwarz's Anarchist Workbench book.
I'm not familiar with that.
No? Oh, no. That's a fantastic book. He's written books, The Anarchist Tool Chest, and he's written loads of books, from all published through Lost Art Press, who also makes some lovely tools and sells some other lovely things in America. He published a book called The Anarchist's Tool Bench.
Okay.
Workbench, rather. And he goes through building various different benches, from very, very cheap but very, very sturdy and very, very good, all the way up to fancy hardwood Rubio workbenches.
Yeah.
Rubo workbenches, not Rubio. They make wood stain, don't they? The French guy. My plan was to make like a really sort of a fairly short joiner's bench with a step in it, and then get a semi-decent table saw. So the joiner bench could that be an outfeed table. But the whole thing would be no longer than my current bench is now, which is about 4.5 foot, I think, 5 foot. Because, you know,
okay, yeah,
my carriage is small.
Yeah.
And yes, and those are still the plans. But as with most great plans of mice and men, haven't got round to it yet. We'll definitely do it one day.
I was going to say, it sounds like the sort of thing you'd need to, having kind of built several kind of workshops out with benches at various stages, either kind of moving in or after moving into a place, which mm-hmm. has been more common. It does sound like it's the case of, and everything will have to come out. And
oh, absolutely.
That's always it's always a dreadful thing to kind of have to look forward to, isn't it? It's kind of, yeah.
Yeah,
it's that opportunity to maybe get rid of some stuff, but there's...
Well, I'd say my garage is currently 2/3 full of crap that could just go or needs to be sold. Yeah.
Doesn't it go?
Well, because I don't want to use the word hoarder because that's slightly a negative connotation. But yeah, I think I have got things which will definitely be useful sometime in the future for something. Well, I don't know what it is yet. It is all the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. And my name's Andy. I am also a hoarder. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, I'm in the situation, and I've had to kind of put it on cease because of the work in the house, the decluttering in the house, amongst other things, and more so the weather. But I've got, Well, technically, we've got three sheds in the garden.
Three sheds?
Yeah, three sheds in the garden. The most recent one was... Well, yeah. The most recent one was purchased on the demands of my better half, so that we actually had somewhere that only contained gardening things.
Mm-hmm.
It does contain a couple of other things other than garden things. It also contains the step ladders. It also contains
our tent. That's not gardening things. That is an exception to the rule. there has been a gardening item infraction.
Yes. So it's the lawnmower, the shredder, not all the sort of gardening tools. Some of the gardening tools, we've got a little storage box as well, which some of the gardening tools go into. So that got put in a couple of years ago because the other two sheds, we couldn't get the lawnmower out of the second most newest shed because it was just rammed with everything else. But there was also the original shed that was here when we moved in was rammed. Now the roof on that is great, but the walls are falling apart. The second shed, the roof is falling apart, but the walls are okay apart from one little patch. So it's been a case of trying to kind of empty the original one so I can get the roof off it. But I need to then empty the second newest one to replace the roof on that, using the roof on the original one.
Because I was going to say, are we going to be using two broken things to make one fixed thing?
Yes, yes. Because the original shed, which was a mashup of at least two sheds, that the previous owners had put into the garden. I'd already replaced the roof. About 11 years ago now, put some proper OSB on it, put some proper quality felt on it. So it's still in good order. But when we put a second shed for the gardening stuff and a bit of overflow, which then became more of an overflow, it was kind of a B&Q special. It was 49, it was 7x7, so 49 square feet, B&Q special on offer. And the OSB roof is about 6 mil thick, which was okay-ish, except the felt was about 3 microns thick, and then we had to get a tree taken down. And even though I told them not to, one of the chainsaw jockeys decided to stand on the roof, so it doesn't really roof anymore. Kind of more just blocks the light.
Yeah, this is great for its 1 year warranty, but after that, you're on your own, pal.
Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, so I've been getting rid of stuff, and I think I've made about £200 just from metal, taking it to the recycling. Yeah, just sort of cashing it in rather than just taking it to the dump and dumping it.
Yeah,
so I can definitely recommend that. But and that was quite. There have been a couple of moments where I've kind of gone, oh, I could have done with that piece of aluminium strip. But, you know, found other ways. And, yeah, actually, a bit of aluminium strip's not that expensive from B&Q.
No, that's what I try and tell myself. You know, every time I see a piece of sheet good sticking out of a skip, it's like, that's coming home with me. And yeah. you cut it up and you end up with bits this big. And thinking, throw it away. But then I think, no, I don't throw it away, because I just happen to have these on my desk because I've got a couple spare. Make these little hooks for plants.
We've got a little J hook in the front room. Yep.
I don't think these were cut from the same piece. So maybe it was. No, it definitely wasn't. But if you've got a little bit of ply, yay big by yay big, you put two holes in it and then you cut it out in the bandsaw. And now you've got two little hooks.
Yeah.
Which with a felt pad on the back, the Velcro pad on the back.
Yeah.
You've got a trailing plant. Put these up and they go all around the room. And so, you know, never throw away a scrap, especially if it's birch ply, because you just can't get it anymore.
Well
you can, but you have to be very, very rich.
Yes. Absolutely.
Last time I looked, a sheet of 18 mil birch ply was £120 plus the VAT for my local timber merchant. Ooh. It used to be about 50.
Yeah.
And I want to say used to be, about 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
Well, I'd say three, pre-pandemic. Yeah. It's
pre-pandemic and pre-that ugliness.
Let's not mention the ugly
over there in where the Baltics are, the plywood comes from.
I get comments about some of the pieces that I keep at the men's shed. Do you remember the old blue Tesco tubs? They went through a bit where they kind of had this thing about going back quite a number of years, which was like, you know, rather than having, you know, throwing away your bags, have this blue plastic tub. You could just put it in your trolley. They were designed to fit in the trolley, so you'd have a stack of them. And you could fill up your trolley.
Like soft rubber, weren't they?
They were hard plastic. Yeah, it was quite hard. It wasn't hard. It's not like ABS, but like a HDP type sort of thing. Quite rigid. Yeah, quite useful. A couple of little handles just folded down, so they would stack. You could stack a bunch of them together, you know, between kind of sort of trips to Tesco's. They wouldn't stack very well, though. That was the only problem. Once they were full, they'd find when they're empty, they would stack inside each other. When they're full, you couldn't stack them. So not that useful. But we got one of those. God knows where it came from. At the actually, it might have come from me. I've still got another one down in the shed. Which I've just got, it's just full of little bits of scrap, nice little bits of ply, nice little bits of birch. We've got stacks of beech, actually not birch, a little bit of birch ply, some nice little bits of wood, some bits of CLS as well. Just like they get thrown into that tub, which goes in. We've got a lumber cart, which is kind of, we'll take a half sheet of board, and then we've got some other slots that'll take long sticky bits. And short sticky bits, and there's a little shelf where this tub fits. It's like, I'll just every now and again, I just grab it. I'm making something, a bit of tool storage. And you just want something, it's like last week, I was putting we've got a pocket hole jigs, and we've got a pack of pocket hole screws. And it's one of those kind of it's got a little handle and it flips up, and you've got all your different sizes and little trays that you can take out. It's like, well, don't want to just put it with the other sort of screws. We want to go on the wall next to the pocket hole jigs. So easiest way of doing it, just make a little bit of a rail, because it's got a little handle on the top. So it's like a little briefcase or lunchbox. So kind of, yeah, little block on the wall with a little lip, so you can just hook it over. Perfect. It's like, you want to cut up a big piece of wood just for that, so into the boot up, find something that's roughly the right size, trim it off. Absolutely. On the bandsaw.
Yeah.
Add a little,
Everything is determined by what's in the scrap bin. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. I want to make it this big, but I haven't got a piece of wood this big, so it's going to be smaller. It's less than ideal, but that's it, because, you know, I'm not going to buy something.
I had a hammer drill that wanted to put up on the wall. I was like, right, I want to make a hook for the hammer drill. So something that the hammer drill will sit on, so it can just be lifted off. So I want a little block. So I need a block that's the thickness of the hammer drill body, and then a piece that's going to go in front of that, so the hammer drill can't just slide off. But then I needed another hook for cable. I didn't have any actual kind of hooks, coat hooks or anything like that. So it ended up, I think I used something like 10 or 12 pieces of scrap. So I had a piece of melamine from an old cupboard as the backing board, which then used to screw to the wall. On top of that then was the block for the drill to sit on. In front of that was the block for the, or not a block, just a piece of board that would stop that coming off. The block that was the thickness of the board was actually quite a big one. Didn't bother cutting it down. And then sitting on front of that was about six pieces of thinner wood that was formed into the approximate shape of a hook that the cable could go over. And it was just like, all hell to the screws, no glue. We decided, because this was again at the shed, and we had two hammer drills. Like, I think we've used one of them once. So in like,
you've used a month's supply of screws to put all this together.
Yeah. I mean, there was like, there were screws going in from the back. There were screws going in from the front. There was like, each layer had a succession of screws. And the problem when you make some of that is, make sure you don't kind of, you've got to try and line up so you don't screw into a screw from the other side.
Well, it's an aesthetic. And if it does the job, it does the job.
Yeah. I don't think it would pass muster with the like of Tom Sachs, though. Yeah. Definitely not not studio.
It's not studio approved. You were not working to code, were you?
No. I would definitely have had to make contributions to Leatherface for how it looked. Yeah, it's... And I do like the kind of... I'm bringing this into... Yeah, did you see the segue there? I've been practicing, learning from Steve.
That was beautiful. It was seamless. Didn't even
notice. Yeah, because that whole... I do like that aesthetic of the kind of Tom Sachs studio, where there's lots of birch ply and there's lots of things with nice big lightning holes, and there's nice little bits of there's a consistent aesthetic between kind of tool holders and how they put together, and everything's got the nice little label, the kind of classic, the sort of thing that the Neistat brothers do as well, with kind of everything gets a little extra label. I do like that. Well, but
this thing here is very much built under that guise.
But so for the audio listeners, just behind Phil Shelby, he's pointing at a sort of tool holder. It looks like there's a pair of scissors and a safety knife, a tape dispenser, and I can't quite make out what's just below the scissors.
That there is a little Stanley
round tape measures. Yeah.
See, I got this some years ago. And it's very nice. I like it, but it has no clip on it, and it has no lock.
So
actually, it's not as useful as you might think it is. But this is sort of the parcel packing station. As part of the you know, the great the quest for space, if I've called a few of my videos, of trying to get rid of stuff. You know, I am basically selling whatever I can on eBay. So I send a lot of parcels these days. So this is, you know, my tape dispenser, that. And then for measuring the box, this thing, yeah. That's fine. So it's got its own little holder in there, which it just sits in there like that. And there's a little turn on the front to prevent it falling out.
I mean, that's classic studio aesthetic.
Yeah.
That's idea. That's nice. And it, yeah,
it's all painted plywood, and it is the cheapest plywood. You know, it's
but if it's painted, 18 mil,
I think it's got 5 plies in it. Yeah, that is thick, soft ply. It is not good quality, and some of it's actually already it's falling apart in places.
Where I was going to say,
it's just not glued.
I was going to say, how many voids has it got? Yeah,
lots of voids. You know, it's a sort of sub shuttering ply, but I got it for free, so never mind.
not far from me. I did a bookbinding course a few years ago.
Oh yeah,
it's pre-pandemic, in Faversham. She's up on the north coast. It's probably about the closest I can get to the coast. Well, possibly not, but it's fairly easy to get to from where I am in Kent, because I'm right in the middle of Kent. And it was on an evening, and the first evening I kind of sort of driving up there, and I hadn't been to, yeah, I had been to Faversham once on a school trip, so I wasn't kind of sort of very familiar with it. I say once actually. I went there for another school thing as well. But it was after I'd given up work that I was kind of driving up there. And instead of driving from kind of like the town where my schools had been, I was driving from home. So a slightly different route. And yeah, so kind of driving up, I go past this. There's a little kind of few farm areas where there's kind of little industrial units based off farms. And I drive past this one, and it's just like, it was early September, so it was still light in the evening because the course started at like 6 o'clock in the evening. I was like, a pile of wood just sticking out of a box there. Like, okay, so I kind of sort of then took note, kind of, yeah, because then I'd already gone 100 yards down the road by the time my brain's kind of thinking about this. Like, right, take a note, right, with the nearest junctions, what's that? I need reference when I'm on my way back. On the way back, I kind of sort of drove past it, but there was no other traffic around. This is in the dark now. I sort of drove past it by about kind of 20 yards. So, right, slammed the brakes on, reversed into this kind of gateway of this plant. And it was all locked up. But there was this OSB crate on the floor with a sign on it saying free, take what you want. And sticking out of it was a bunch of, there was some little bits of sort of stick, just timber, kind of sort of, yeah, so a couple of bits of pallet that had been sort of put in there. And this, some really nice 3mm and 6mm ply. And a little bit of OSB as well, sort of some 12mm OSB. I was like, the place was, I kind of sort of looked, it was a shed manufacturer and garden rooms and the stuff like that. I'm just like, ooh. So I was like, right, what can I fit into the car? So I stuck a pile of stuff into the car. And it was all kind of, there were some odd shapes. But, yeah, I mean, the one piece was, you know, 8 foot long, but 18 inches wide. So, yeah, it was just like, but really floppy. It was just like, wasn't going to fit in the car because I'd taken our smaller car. So I was like, right, okay, don't want to, but snapped it in half just to get it in. And it was just like the following week, because it was a weekly course, following week, right, it was just like, right, called in again, got another bunch of them. Over the course of 4 weeks of the course, I picked up, you know, 4 carfuls of quite nice bits of ply and some bits of OSB and some nice little bits of sort of scrap. And, you know, they ended up, of course, rammed into my shed. And, yeah, didn't get used for ages. Yeah, it used some little bits, but a lot of it didn't get used. But as I said earlier about kind of, yeah, leaking roof, just like last summer when I kind of was starting to go through it, it was just like a bunch of it had all turned moldy. And it was just like, it was just heartbreaking that I'd spent ages sort of doing, hadn't used it. And then, of course, just gone. It's just like, well, it didn't come. Yeah. I shouldn't have felt so bad about it because it was free. But it ended up, going to the tip just because there's no way I could have cleaned it up. It was too far gone.
I suppose it's our where I work, there's a one of the departments, the sort of like performing arts department, they have a sort of theatrical scenery workshop, and the chap that used to run the place would always buy the really, really good stuff, the really nice birch ply, the high end gear. I think possibly maybe for his own nefarious reasons, I couldn't tell you. But so much of this ended up in the skip because, you know, one side's been painted or it's got, you know, this has been cut somehow, or it's been cut weirdly, or someone got a bit happy with the jigsaw and went wrong. And now this, you know, perfectly fine piece of the whole sheet has now just got this weird sort of zip through it. And this would all end up in the skip. And so for a good few years, it was rich pickings. He's left, and I think they sort of looked at what they were spending on sort of scenery materials budgets, and the quality's gone right down, Andy. It's gone right down.
That's very good. Have they got to the stage of repainting everything? That's the question.
Yeah. Well, I think they also cottoned on sort of like, well, if this has been painted, then there's another side that hasn't been painted, and we can use this twice. Which is good for them, not good for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think anyone that kind of follows you on Instagram will know you work in and from what you've mentioned, you work in an educational establishment.
I do work in a further and now higher. We now offer higher education.
Yeah.
Exactly. Same old friendly service, but it costs more money. you've worked in education, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean,
so you know how incredibly wasteful it is.
Was it a couple of years ago? I'd gone to what was it? I was dropping my youngest off at school at a school to do exams because we'd homeschooled, but obviously need to do exams somewhere. And I'd arranged to them to at the school I used to work at, and it was like they'd been having a pile of work done. I was just like, it was this huge, the largest, you know, the large skips you can get. I don't know how many cubic feet, you know, like 24 cubic yards.
The big ones.
The big ones, yeah. The kind of, yeah.
The ones you can't get out of easily if you find yourself in one.
Yeah, the eight foot high kind of.
Has anyone got a step ladder?
Yeah. And go past one of those. And there was like you said, there were science benches in there. And I'm just like, that's really nice wood, and I could clean that up and use it for something. And there was a bunch of other things. It was just like, I didn't, because I wasn't working there anymore.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I could. Well, because
you're not working there anymore. You've still got a small claim over that.
Well, I could have, I'm sure if I'd have, I know the caretaker was one that worked there when I was there. And, at least one of the other caretakers as well. They'd had quite a changeover, but the chief caretaker and one of the other guys were both guys I knew. So it was just like, I could have gone and kind of gone, can. And I'm sure they'd have said, yeah. But no, I just like.
You've got to know the caretakers. Resisted. You've got to know the portering staff. They know where all the good stuff's hiding.
Not because they've hidden it.
Maybe, but you know. You know.
But the amount of waste I've seen at schools, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's
horrible.
As part of the day job, we've just started stripping out all the smart boards. Remember smart boards? The digital whiteboards?
Yeah.
The thing that was going to revolutionize teaching.
Yeah, it didn't.
No. And we had to, these things work. They mostly work. Some of them didn't work. we did a survey. It's sort of like, who actually uses these? Because projectors are getting old. They're getting dim. Do we replace projectors or do we just buy a big TV? I can tell you what, a big TV is now a lot cheaper than a projector.
Yeah.
And the survey came back. It's like less than 10% actually use the interactive whiteboard, digital whiteboard stuff. They're just getting pulled out and sent to the Wii Skip. What I did find was interesting is, have you read a book called The Revenge of Analog?
No.
By David. I will check. I want to say. Wait a minute. Revenge of Analog. What's his name? David Sachs. It was written about 10 years ago, and it talks about all the various analog resurgence and about
how
digital was going to be everywhere, and it was everywhere. And then people started playing board games and buying vinyl records and making notes in paper notebooks.
Yeah.
And one of the chapters is about how the analog hasn't really been, they've desperately tried to replace it in schools and education. And actually one of the people that worked on one of the very early smart boards, I forget his name now, I read this book a couple of years ago. But he started in the early 90s, they were working on this technology. And for 8 years, I think it was 8 years, 8 or 10 years, he said, this is a training issue, not a resistance issue.
Yeah.
But this is definitely the good stuff. This is what you want. And then after that, he basically gave up and said, because do you know what people want? They want whiteboards. So he went off and worked for a company that makes really high quality whiteboards. He's left the technology industry aside and has gone back to making whiteboards because that's what they want.
I used to find it, I did like an interactive whiteboard. I did use interactive whiteboards and I did use the interactive element of them.
You were a science teacher, weren't you?
I was a science teacher, yeah. I tried to train other people to do it as well.
Science and maths, those are the two areas that really wanted to hold on to them. Everywhere else, don't need it.
But the thing that I found interesting is where you'd get a school, they'd rip out their boards, stick an interactive board in a projector. And it's like, hang on, I'm doing a test today, and I just want to write the start time and the end time on. Do I turn on the projector? Can't just write on that board because it doesn't take an ordinary pen. Nope. It's like the number of arguments I had with people going, no, don't take out the ordinary dry whiteboard as well. I want that still because there's plenty of times sometimes when you want to go, I'll write the instructions there, and there's something then on the screen that's changing. But I think if I was going back into the classroom now, I probably wouldn't get an interactive board, but what I would want is a visualizer and some sort of screen. I think a screen now, a projector or a large screen is pretty much it's the chalkboard of the 21st century. Yeah, I think a classroom that one is daft, but a visualizer and maybe a graphics tablet, a portable one ideally. Those two things, well, I wouldn't bother with an interactive whiteboard. Visualizer would be number one on the list.
Now, we've replaced most of ours with just big TVs and whiteboards have gone up. The thing that I still get asked for a lot is flip chart paper.
Interesting.
Yeah, people just still love it. And I can see why, because, it doesn't require batteries or plugging in. It never goes wrong. It doesn't require assistance to set up. It doesn't need letting through the firewall.
I never really got on with flip charts. I never really liked flip charts.
Hmm.
I mean, I've used a range of technology. I'm not quite old enough to have used a bander as a teacher. Do you remember banders?
No,
the Banda copier, the old purple. It was a waxed cylinder. You wrote on a waxed sheet with a stylus. That then went on to a cylinder, which
was just like a mimeograph. Then used
to pick up. I guess so. Yeah. So it's like early. You just kind of tune, and you put these sheets, and they stank. They stank of kind of solvent. So if you hand them out to a class, I mean, this is when I was in school. Yeah, you got handed out. Yeah, all the kids. I mean, yeah, back in the sort of 80s, where the glue sniffing was the thing. Yeah, people would be sniffing it, thinking they were getting high. They weren't. They were just kind of at best. It was irritating the nasal lining. But yeah, it's like
As a kid, I used to love anything solvent based. You could quite often find, sort of like 7-year-old me sniffing a freshly creosoted fence. Absolutely loved it. And four-star and Castrol. Strimmer oil, that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's done me no harm. Much.
That's good. The one that almost caught me once was a unlabeled bottle of concentrated hydrochloric acid in the basement of the scout hut I went to. Yeah, or scout hut. I see it was a building that contained scouts. It's like, what's this bottle over here next to the old petrol stoves? It's like, well, there's no label on this. What is it? Took the top off, and it's just like this steam comes out because it just stuff was so concentrated. Like, give that a whiff and lose every single nasal cell on the first inch of your nose.
Yeah, put that down.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, overhead projectors was quite the thing for a while. Did plenty of that with the rolls of acetate rather than sheets.
Oh, sheets OHPs, were fine.
OHPs. Sheets were fine if you kind of you could keep them. It's like having a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
But then if you had the roll, you could do the same. You could just write instructions as you were going along rather than to prepare them, and then you could kind of go back if you've got the same lesson again tomorrow. You just kind of roll back and just kind of go, right, okay, right.
Got this again. Yeah, this one.
But it'd be chalk. I mean, chalk was just horrible stuff. Just dried your skin out. All sorts.
Oh, I don't know. I made a big chalkboard for the office because we had a we would always, because it's a very small team that I work in, and we tried having shared calendars and shared notebooks, like all on the computer, and that was all good. And so, like, well, do you know what works best? Is this big piece of ply, which I've painted with chalkboard paint. I've hung it on the wall, and you can write the things you've got to do on it. It's right by the door. You can't avoid it.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting focal point. And other people come in and do stupid drawings on it as well. That's fine. I encourage it. Yeah. We have various chalks.
And you can wipe it off. Once the job is done, you wipe it off and
exactly.
For the next one.
It's a simple solution. Yeah, I think too many people try and, well, there's lots of companies that like to sell you a solution to a problem that you didn't realize you actually had.
It's quite a few years ago, I was listening to a podcast. It stopped now. I can't remember the name of the woman who ran it. She's Kent based down in Hythe. And it was all about kind of, she'd worked for, I think, Staples amongst other companies, mm-hmm. the kind of the office people. And she's very much into marketing and business management and stuff like that. And she ran this podcast, and she interviewed kind of executives and business coaches and just a whole bunch of successful people in the business world from all over the world. Yeah. And various businesses, various sectors. Yeah. Some of it was commercial stuff. Some of it was entrepreneurs. Some of it was business, some of it was business to clients, and all sorts of different businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And she had there was always a few questions that she was common to every interview that she did. And it was basically talking about how their productivity and how they took control of their productivity. What was their kind of, what would an ideal day look like in terms of, getting stuff done. And the one thing that was really quite interesting, and she used to comment on it because it came up so many times, so many of these, you know, really successful people, and some of them, you know, running 7-8-figure companies, the proportion of them that used a notepad for their planning, for their record keeping of ideas, just kind of, you know, and some of them were using kind of, you know, paper calendars as well. And this wasn't, you know, so long ago that, you know, things like Slack were around, and, you know, there's a bunch of these kind of, you know, productivity apps, Trello, all these were kind of in and available. But the number of them that said, no, I just like a pen and pad. Give me a nice pencil, give me a Moleskine or an iPad. Yeah.
Everything I do is in this.
I've got a OneNote, and I find OneNote useful for certain things. And I've got, you know, various other kind of apps where I do put stuff, Google Keep and the like. Mm-hmm. But actually for a lot of stuff, just like it. The orange ones just behind me are cheap 5mm gridded exercise books, maths books, basically.
Yeah.
You can draw in them far easier than you can on lined paper. You can write lists. You can have little tick boxes. They're dirt cheap. Yeah, they're pence each. Yeah, I think they're, because obviously I don't buy them at educational rates. You know, so buy them off Amazon, they're like 40 pence each, 50 mm-hmm. pence each. I haven't bought any for a while, so they're probably, you know, £7.50 each now. But it's just, yeah. Bookbinding. I'm taking a bookbinder as a hobby. Right, okay, right. I'll just use it for bookbinding. So almost all my notes on bookbinding go into one of those here in one place. Yeah. Oh, I'm doing something else. So, yeah, I'm doing some, trying to think of something else I've used one for.
Just
blog ideas, just, whatever.
It's fun. Just the physical act of just writing something down that you need to remember makes it easy to remember.
Yeah.
Even if you then don't go back and tick it off, just because you've offloaded it out of here onto a notebook.
Yeah.
And just like you've made that sort of physical connection between an idea and that you've got to do something, or something needs to be done, or, you know, some sort of stuff that needs to be done before a certain time or on a certain date.
And do you find just because it's down, written rather than typed, that's something about the action of writing?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like I have, you know, reminders going off on my phone frequently, and it's just so easy just to swipe and go, yeah, I'll do that in a minute. And then you don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is this damn thing bleeping at me again?
Yeah, I use scraps of paper a lot for kind of if I need to do something, you know, if I'm doing something for the next hour. That's something I'll do for the day. I'll just write, okay, start of the day, or the end of the day for the next day. I'll just make a little list, right? What are the five things I've got to do tomorrow? And I'll just jot those down in the order that I'm going to do them, especially if there's something I need to forget. So yeah, like this evening before she went to bed, I said, yeah, well, there's some parcels there that can you post those? Yeah, it's early Christmas presents to go off to some relatives. It's like, okay, they need posting. Second class is fine, yeah, whatever. It's like, so yeah, that needs to go on a list. If I just leave it, they're on the piano in the hall, and if I just don't write it down, they'll stay on the piano in the hall. And I might remember at some point, normally when the post office is closed. But if I write on a scrap of paper, you know, right, okay, right, so Monday morning, yeah, sort out Maker's Waffle, you know, get all the posts done for that, get the Patreon stuff done, whatever, after show, get the post done and whatever. And I write a little list of things I've got to do on a Monday, and then I just cross it off and just throw it away. I know some people like to keep their record of what they've done and achieved, but I just,
I don't know. I mean, I do a similar thing at work. Because we generate so much excess paper from copiers.
Yep.
All the nonsense that really doesn't need to be printed, but it gets printed anyway, or just gets left. You know, at the end of the day, you can have like a wedge this thick just from one copier of left prints. So what I do is I cut it up. I cut that down into A5 and get a stack of this stuff and just stick a binder clip on it and just use them as scratch notes. Because this stuff doesn't need to be kept. It doesn't need to be archived. You know, when you use it for notes, the stuff you have to write stuff down. You don't need to keep it.
You're jotting down a serial number that you want to go and look up. You've taken the serial number down off the back of a machine and you're going to look something up.
Exactly. Once you've done it, you tear it off and throw it away. It's done. Yeah. And at least then this piece of paper hasn't been entirely wasted.
Yeah.
I mean, won't bore you with the stuff, but I've been sort of doing a study over the last sort of 12, 24 months of just how much money our organization spends on printing. And it is absolutely staggering. And just why are we spending so much? Why are we printing stuff? It's 2023. A lot of this can be delivered in an email.
The paperless office, was something that was, the 1980s saw the rise in the idea of the paperless office.
Yeah, tomorrow's world promising us the paperless office by 1991.
I don't know if you, Tim Hunkin and his Secret Life of the Office.
Fantastic, brilliant.
I think it's the end of the photocopier one, or it might have been the there was one that was specifically, there was one that was talking about several things within the office. And this is what, early 90s, I think the Secret Life of the Office came out. And they were talking about, he then mentioned, and it's only got worse, how the idea of the paperless office has actually created more use of paper.
Mm.
Yeah, especially as now there's the idea of, you can just, I've saved that as I've got that saved. Oh, I'm going to a meeting. Right, I'll just print that out. And, but there's already a copy in the filing cabinet. Yeah, but it's quicker to actually just print another copy out.
Let's print that out. So are you going to this meeting? Are you taking your laptop to this meeting? How about you just... No? Okay. I was very glad when he put those back up on YouTube, because I do remember watching those as a kid back when they first went out. And I have been to his automata museum when it was in Covent Garden. Downstairs in Covent Garden, his automata museum was there.
I haven't been. I've got some friends who've been to, for some of the previous guests on here, actually, have been to the new place that he's got, where he's got his machines in.
Yeah, I don't know where that is.
It's in London. I can't remember the name of the street, but it's kind of he's got, it's just his machines. And then I think Southend Pier, he's got some stuff as well.
Maybe
haven't visited yet. I definitely do want to try and get to see those. That would be be something that would grab my attention, which is another pressing these segues. Learning from the master. Yeah, Steve's Fools and Tools is back. So Steve's back. So I'm getting the segues practice and the inspiration from the master.
That was beautiful.
So the attention grabbers, the things that have been keeping our attention in the past or just about to take our attention, whether it's things we've read or things we've been watching or things that we've been doing, it doesn't really matter what type of thing it is or whether we've got one or more. So I know you've already sent me a couple, which is... Most people don't, but that's good. And it doesn't really matter whether they do or not.
You did ask for them, so I thought, I might as well have a little bit of a think about it if I possibly could. There's a couple of people. I don't YouTube. They're definitely on Instagram. This chappy called OD Form, who is just doing the most extraordinary joinery. The sort of stuff that I would really, really love to be able to do.
He's got some beautiful, some of those kind of the dovetails where you multiple angles and...
Multiple angles and then locking dovetails, rotating dovetails, mostly things that you probably really don't need to do, but it's nice to know that it can be done.
I do wonder how often some of these people who make these things do those things, whether they just sort of do it, right, I'm going to do this because I can and for show, and but I
does this really need for the to be a for the self show. a self-locking pinned tenon. No, it doesn't need to be that, but look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing which, I mean, that's your 10,000 hours plus there, I think.
Yeah, I do like Fancy Johnny. I've been chatting with the chairman of the men's shed. I was spending a lot of my time on organizing the tools at the moment and things like that. And one of the things I've said I want to do once that's kind of done, and we're getting close to the end in the main workshop, we've got a turning room as well, is I haven't done a huge amount of joinery, proper joinery. Done scrappy stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone does sort of half laps and butt joints and things like that, but I haven't really done any proper joinery. I'd like to. And we've got some old joinery tools. You know, we've got some nice old planes. We've got some nice chisels. We've got some nice saws are a little bit blunt, but we've got some saws. And, you know, the Japanese pull saws actually make life a bit easier anyway. So, I want to kind of have a go. And I've said one of the things I would like to do, because I want to learn how to do it myself better, but is to have almost like a series of examples of joints hanging on the wall. That's a dovetail, that's a half lap, that's a thing, and just make really nice ones. Just sort of take the time to square up the wood really nicely. Take the time to use a knife rather than just a pencil to mark it out.
These things, it's all in the preparation.
Yeah.
If your stock isn't true and square, then nothing else afterwards will be either.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's 90% preparation.
Yeah, and taking time as well. I mean, I tend to, most of the stuff I build, I'm trying to do it quickly. So it's like, I'm doing the half lap. Okay, well, let's just set the trenching depth guide on the mitre saw, and I'll just trench out a bunch, stick a block of wood in front of it so you're getting mostly a horizontal cut, and then just sort of trench out the half lap. And there's a few little ridges, right? Well, I'll just grab a chisel quickly and just get the worst of those off. And it's roughly in the right shape and it's not wobbling too much. That will do.
Yeah. Is it good or is it good enough?
Yeah. it'll do. Yeah. Definitely it'll do.
It'll do. Yeah. It'll do.
Necessarily. It's good. It's good enough that it's not going to fall apart. But yeah. But it'd be nice to. It would be nice to make some examples of. Yeah, that's nice. Look at that. You've got to use a mallet to tap that together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not splitting when you do it.
No, yeah, everything's perfectly cut.
Yeah, it was like, and square.
I mean, my first few attempts at dovetails were hilarious. Pins and tails, well, that's the wrong way round. And yes, that's quite wonky. And you could drive a bus through those gaps.
bit of PVA and some sawdust.
Exactly. But if you were brilliant at everything the first try, then what's the point?
It would be nice to be brilliant at things. Some things first try. Yeah, save the 10,000 hours of practice to get it right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't think anybody who can, the two things which I have failed multiple times at is thinking, is using 3D software, SketchUp, AutoCAD. So I desperately want to learn these things, and I sit down with, right, I'm going to follow a really, really basic tutorial, like absolute idiot's guide to using SketchUp. And after 20 minutes, I just want to throw the laptop out the window because it's like, this is absolute witchcraft. I don't know how this works. It's hateful. Where's my paper and a ruler? I know that works.
I think if Jamie was here, he'd be saying, well, there's your problem with SketchUp. That's the first part of your problem.
Well, you know, on the other one, what is it? Fusion 360.
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked at that and just thought, I don't know what this is. I don't understand it. I'm just going to walk away.
It helps.
Too complicated.
During lockdown, Jamie actually did the Fools of Tools school we call it, I can't remember what we call it now, School for Fools or something. And yeah, he did a thing on using Fusion 360 and actually having somebody take you through from start with the idea of something to make. Yeah, there was actually kind of a plan, right? We're going to design this thing. So there was an actual thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
And having somebody then kind of going, and for a few people who'd used it, it was just like, yeah, right, fine, yeah, okay. And for a couple of us, including myself, it was like, yeah, I haven't used any CAD software since 2004, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, and it was completely different then. And then it was, and that was on a course and kind of, yeah, being taken through it step by step. So it's just like, no, this isn't working. Why isn't this? What I can see what you're doing, but mine's not doing exactly the same thing. And then you've got somebody who'll go, okay, well, tell me what setting have you got this thing on? And yeah, it was like, right, change that. And yeah, oh, right, now it works. Actually, kind of having somebody almost over your shoulder kind of to do it really, really helps. But then you have to use it as well. You know, you've got to be using it, I think. It's like Excel. Yeah, I mean, I used to use Excel daily, and I used to be really good at using Excel and writing formulae and things like that. It's just like, I probably could just about do it, but certainly not to the depth that I used to be able to, because I haven't for 6 years.
Well, you know the old joke, don't you? Now, there's two types of people in this world. People who are really good at Excel and fun people.
What was the other one? On that note, what was the other
one? On that note, moving swiftly on. The other one I'd written about was Dave Fogler at the Synodrome, who I believe does work or has worked at Industrial Light and Magic.
Yeah, I think he has. Yep.
And
he's been on Tested as well with Adam Savage.
Yeah. And just his short studio films are just delightful. Making little sets of drawers out of foam core. And a very Saxian aesthetic as well going on there to loop all the way back round. But he's done his first year of doing up his family cabin up in Maine. I mean, he lives in San Francisco, I think. But he's got a family cabin up in Maine, which is needed a lot of restoration. And he's just been up there, him and his dog, doing stuff. And it's beautifully made, beautifully shot, lovely work. Well worth a watch, and has... Yeah, I know. Yeah, the numbers don't matter. I mean, they do matter to some people who do it as a sort of full-time employment, so to speak. But yes, not a lot of subscribers on his YouTube channel.
Which I think is
slightly criminal considering the quality of what's going on.
Well, I mean, I could say the same for you, because I could say the same for you. I mean, I think the quality of your videos has been from quite early on. Very, very high.
I remember having a conversation with Mr. Steve House of the Fools with the Tools in a coffee shop somewhere. Was it in a coffee shop or was it in my flat? I can't remember, but this was quite a long time ago now, before he was famous. And we were saying that, you know, when I first did those first few videos, I was on holiday and I thought, yeah, I can definitely do a project a week. Easy.
Yeah.
And then you're not on holiday anymore. And it's like, maybe one a month. Maybe one every 6 months. And I think last year I made one thing or one video, maybe two videos. I can't remember. But yes. But, you know,
I've recorded two this year. I haven't edited them yet, but I've recorded two.
I mean, I've got two in Final Cut that I have not finished. So, you know, by the end of the year,
I'm not saying how many I've got in edit altogether, because there might be more than two. But I've recorded two this year. Yeah. And boxings so fairly easy to record. And I probably should try and edit them because they were unboxings of something sent for me to use at the men's shed by a company. I probably should if we want to get any more things from the company.
Yeah, this is two things that I've made, and one of those things, you just need the last few bits. There's last bits of B-roll, that bit of voiceover. But yeah, where do you find the time?
Talking of time, we'll maybe talk about that in the after show in a few moments. Maybe. So where can people find you, Phil, if they don't already know where to find you? Which should be shocking if they don't. Yeah, would expect all our listeners to know where you are. But where can people find you?
People can find me under the name of Phil Makes Things, not Phil Makes Things Occasionally, although maybe I should change my name. on the YouTube and on the Instagram and nowhere else, because a year ago I closed off all the social medias apart from Instagram and YouTube. And I have to say, I don't miss them at all.
We buy the i newspaper on the weekend. We only buy it on a Saturday because it gives us the TV for the following week, which is a handy thing to do. It's got a bunch of puzzles in it, which I like to do. And there's a date. There's a quiz. There's two quizzes. There's a weekly news quiz and there's a just a general knowledge quiz. And it was quite interesting. One of the questions this week was I think it was the mayor of Paris or something had described something as a global sewer. I was like, we were like, what was that? I was like, went through the answers. It was Twitter.
Oh, well, whatever
X has become. Yeah.
We were thinking
the Seine, go through Paris or the English Channel or something like that. And it's just like, nope, social media. I think it was just about right. Right, on that note, we will say goodbye to the fine folks that are watching us live, and we will transfer over to the after show. And that will be available for our patrons. So if people want to hear the rest of the conversation, then they would have to sign up for patreon.com makerswaffle in order to hear the rest of the after shows and the after shows for the other rest. So, bye, folks.
Thank you very much. Ta-ta.